Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with a Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
We're back. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS 634. Thank you for joining us. Well, it looks like state lawmakers have reached an agreement with the University of Michigan on stem cell research reporting, but how do pro-life advocates feel about what kind of information the university will be sharing? And what's on the pro-life agenda moving forward in Michigan? To find out, I'm joined by Ed Rivette. He's the legislative director for Right to Life of Michigan. Ed, thanks for joining us on 1320 WILS.
My pleasure, Michael.
So as you know, in 2008, voters in Michigan passed a state constitutional amendment allowing for the production of new embryonic stem cells. And since then, research has proceeded. The University of Michigan is now one of the world's leaders in this area of research. So tell me, why is there such a push to get the number of embryos being used? What would that tell us?
Well, I mean, since the ballot proposal was approved and voters approved a broad constitutional amendment, there were a number of things that just were not built into a constitutional amendment because they're broad and general in nature. So there was no real implementation language in place. There are no definitions for key terms. There are no penalties in case someone violates the constitutional amendment, those sorts of things. No accountability mechanisms. No state agency is required to oversee the research. So these were things that we were attempting to just put in place by way of legislation in the last 3 years. And quite frankly, the effort to do that has produced no results at all. And The legislature simply said, well, you know, if you just give us some basic parameters, tell us how this is going. You know, are people donating a lot of embryos? Are they not? How many stem cell lines have you successfully created? That sort of thing. Because really, we have no information at all with regard to these things.
But isn't it true that this stuff, this research, is far more complicated than anyone, probably other than these scientists, to really fully understand?
Well, no. I mean, certainly it's technically very difficult. That is for sure. It's a very, you're talking about microscopic and very small cell cluster. So to technically accomplish it and manage it in the laboratory environment, yeah, it's difficult. The concepts themselves are not that complicated for people to understand. We understand that our cars are complicated machines, but we know we can put gas in them and how to turn them on and make them do all sorts of things for us. But we know we need that very highly skilled mechanic when something goes wrong.
Well, now, state lawmakers, they have reached a compromise, right? The university is going to provide a report that lawmakers say is going to be sufficient, at least for them.
Yeah, it's a starting point. It's a starting point that will, you know, give some basic parameters. Again, we're in a circumstance where we passed a provision to allow people to donate their so-called, you know, extra or leftover embryos, and we don't have any knowledge as to how many embryos there are in the state of Michigan in storage. I mean, we just don't have a clue, and we don't know how many embryos are being donated, et cetera. So these are just going to give us some kind of benchmarks and, quite frankly, give us a basis for knowing how effective the constitutional amendment has been in getting the embryos available for researchers, whether families are really choosing it.
So if we got a number, then what exactly would that tell us, whatever that number might be? I mean, ultimately, it's, you know, the embryos are being used for research, and I'm guessing, you know, those that are available, those embryos that are available are being used or being stored to use in the future. So what would we do with that information?
Well, again, it gives us some parameters just to know how the amendment is having an effect in the research community. And in addition, and I'll give you this prediction now, in my view, probably 5 years from now, no one's going to care about embryonic stem cell research.
Well, why is that?
Because I don't think it's going to work. We said that 4 years ago when the ballot proposal came along, and we said that, there are going to be alternative forms of research that are going to produce results and effective results, and embryonic stem cells are going to be proven to be ineffective.
Don't you believe that some of the research is going to garner advancements in our medical science?
Well, sometimes research will tell us what's not going to work. I suppose that can be useful. Okay, that doesn't work. But the point being is that over the course of the years that research is ongoing, if we have no sense of what's been happening and no idea of how many embryos are being donated and so forth, when at some point, what might the university do with these? And what, there are no requirements, there are no parameters in the constitutional amendment that the voters approved for what they're supposed to do with them if they choose not to do research with them. Voters didn't decide that detail. So what will happen is we'll end up, and we were trying to enact some of these things into the regulatory structure to say, well, what happens if they choose not to use them? Can they throw them away? Do they have to notify the parents they're going to throw them away? I mean, there are all kinds of these questions, but there are no answers.
Isn't that what happens with embryos that are not used in research, that are not used by parents? Aren't they at some point discarded?
They can be. They can be donated to a couple for them to adopt if they choose. So, I mean, presumably the couple maybe say, okay, we're going to donate these. If you don't use them, throw them away yourself. I would suspect that might be the case, but you know, the reality is without any kind of regulatory structure or oversight, there's no accountability. And this is a public institution. Mm-hmm. Although we have equal concerns, if there's a private institution, a private corporation doing this research, we don't even know, because they're completely without any kind of a statutory requirement to even tell anybody they're doing this kind of research.
I see.
So if we all want to worry about big corporations doing all sorts of unethical things, whether they're banks or oil companies or anybody else, well, biotech companies could be doing this research, and we'd have no way of knowing.
I'm talking to Ed Rivette. He's the legislative director for Right to Life of Michigan. But, Ed, isn't in the realm of the pro-life movement, isn't the stem cell issue on the periphery? Aren't there many people that may be anti-abortion but really don't view stem cell research as something that they have a strong position on?
That's probably true for a certain percentage of people. People have varying positions on different issues. But you know, for this particular issue and what's been agreed to in terms of the University of Michigan issuing a report for the first time is information that, as a public institution, there isn't any reason that they wouldn't disclose that kind of information, particularly because they are supposed to be complying with a very specific constitutional amendment that the voters approved.
I see.
Accountability there is not unreasonable.
I want to shift the conversation slightly. What is a Right to Life's position on the Affordable Care Act's contraception coverage portion there? I mean, it's clearly been a problem for religious organizations. Do you support the idea of free contraception for women?
Well, we don't take a position on the issue of the free contraception for women, but we equally affected as the religious institutions. We don't provide contraceptive coverage for our employees because of the concern and because some, usually the health prescription, I mean the prescription plans would include the use of abortion-causing drugs. So because of that, we choose not to include it in our benefit plan. But under the Affordable Care Act, we will be required to buy something that violates our very purpose for existence. So we, like the religious institutions that are challenging this, we also are opposed to the mandate. We're not opposed to the idea that people who want it can get it or buy it or put it in all the plans or even pay for it for the people who want it. We have not taken a position on that aspect. We have taken a position on the fact, don't make us buy it.
I see.
That's all we're saying. All we've asked for is don't make us buy something we don't want to buy, because we all, as members of the organization, as employees, don't want to buy it.
Now, President Obama clearly is not a pro-life president, but so tell me, for those who say that abortion rights for women in the U.S. are now safe and that even if there are efforts to put some restrictions on certain procedures, that ultimately it will remain legal in this country for the foreseeable future, what do you say to them?
Well, it will remain legal for the foreseeable future. I mean, Roe versus Wade remains the law of the land by fiat of the Supreme Court, and absent either a constitutional amendment approved by, two-thirds of the states, mm-hmm. or or a reversal by the U.S. Supreme Court, then it remains the law of the land as it has for 39 years.
What do you think is the best chance for Roe versus Wade to be reversed and for abortion to become illegal in this country at this point?
Well, people need to understand that even if Roe versus Wade is reversed, that will not make abortion illegal in our country. And people need to understand this. A lot of people are under the false impression that if the Supreme Court overrules Roe versus Wade, suddenly abortion will be illegal all across the land. And in fact, almost the reverse will be true. If Roe versus Wade is overturned, there are no more than about 8 states that have a statute in place to fill the void that will occur. And in fact, in at least 17 states, there is a state-level Roe versus Wade decision that will kick in or will control, and in some cases it already overrides the federal one. It's more broad. In those states, abortion will be as legal or even more broadly protected without Roe versus Wade.
I see. So this will become a state-by-state issue then?
It'll become a state-by-state issue. It's going to be all of a sudden, the Supreme Court's overturned Roe versus Wade, suddenly it's illegal everywhere, and that's just not going
to
happen.
So Right to Life, what is your view then, the organization's view on the best way on the federal level to make abortion illegal in the country?
Well, we don't view the strategic standpoint at this juncture to say that we're trying to make abortion illegal throughout the country. What our objective is to remove the hindrance that Roe versus Wade is.
And then go state by state. And essentially, then you'd go by after it's state by state.
Well, we would return it to a democratic process to begin with. I mean, ultimately, to protect or to make abortion illegal per se across the whole country, you'd need probably a reverse, constitutional scenario. Rather than there being a right to an abortion, there be a right to life for unborn children. Mm-hmm. And obviously we're working in that direction. I mean, that's not like a big mystery or a hidden agenda on our part. That's what
we're
about.
Just about a minute left, but tell me, what do you, in terms of the country's view on social issues in general, I mean, many would say we've become a much more liberal country on a lot of different social issues. We certainly see it when it comes to same-sex marriage. Do you think we're heading in that direction in general?
Well, I think it's a mixed bag because the latest Gallup poll actually showed a majority of American citizens self-identify as pro-life, about 51% to about 42% pro-choice. So, if you look at just that Gallup poll trending over the last 15 years, it's flipped in terms of the majorities in support or self-identification. So we actually view the trend on the abortion issue as moving in our direction.
Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. Ed Rivette, Legislative Director for Right to Life of Michigan. Ed, thanks so much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure.
Hey, we're coming right back to talk about this new MSU study on anxiety and the way it affects men and women very differently. This is fascinating stuff. That's next. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.